Welcome to the AXA XL Healthcare Risk Insights Podcast. I'm your host, Shalay Hendrickson, Head of Healthcare here at AXA XL Bermuda. Today we're going to be discussing care considerations for behavioral health adolescents in the emergency department. I'm so excited to share this podcast with Dr. Leslie Zun, as well as with Ms. Amy Wolfinger. Dr. Zun is the Medical Director at Lake County Health Department. He is also the Chairman and Professor in the Department of Emergency Medicine. Additionally, he is with the Department of Psychiatry at the Rosalind Franklin University of Medicine and Science, Chicago School of Medicine. Dr. Zun is the Chief Editor of the Behavioral Medicines for Healthcare Providers, Textbook and Course Director for the National Update on Behavioral Emergencies Conference. Also with me is Ms. Amy Wolfinger. She is the Senior Vice President, Casualty and Healthcare Insurance Broker at Aon Bermuda Limited. She has extensive experience crafting unique insurance and reinsurance solutions for her healthcare clients. Welcome, Amy and Dr. Zun. Let's get into today's show. Today, we want to look specifically at trends and care management for adolescents with behavioral health conditions. Pulled from the Health and Human Services website, one in five adolescents has had a serious mental disorder, yet less than half receive any psychiatric treatment. Dr. Zun, to get us started, please tell us what trends you are seeing in the ED as it relates to behavioral health adolescents.
Well, so it's really interesting that what we're seeing today is a significant increase in the number of psychiatric patients presenting to the emergency department. So the figures have gone up from about overall, and these include adults and kids, and we'll talk about kids specifically in a minute, but it's went from about 5.6% to about 15% of all patients coming to an emergency department with a psychiatric and or substance use problem. And in kids, it's significantly smaller, about 1.6% of all the ED visits for kids were psychiatrically related, but we're seeing an increase in that group as well. But to me, the interesting thing isn't just the number of patients presenting with that problem, because that's overt. But the question is, how many of those patients coming into emergency departments have a mental illness that's undiagnosed and untreated? And so we actually did a study looking at 100 adults, and we did the same study with 100 kids who presented to the emergency department without a chief complaint of a psychiatric disorder, substance use problem. And we did the mini international test, which looks at one of 16 psychiatric diagnoses. And this test is really a screening tool to look at whether someone could have one of these problems or not. And it turns out that 45% of the adults and 40% of the children, now this is an inner city Chicago community, screened in for one or more psychiatric diagnoses. So when, at least for the adults, we think about, well, we have 15% of them come in with a psychiatric complaint, plus 45% of them have some undiagnosed psychiatric problem, or it could be substance abuse problem. So that turns out to be a huge number of patients that either have a complaint of psychiatric substance disorder or undiagnosed. So it's really important that we think about what's going on with this patient when they come into the emergency department. Could it be psychiatric? Could it be medical? Or could it be substance use? Or could it be some combination of all of those?
Wow, those figures are really staggering. I think, Shalay, thanks for hosting this, because I think behavioral health is just at epidemic levels in the U.S. right now. And it's really a top priority in healthcare for everyone's safety in the community, and the hospitals are really trying to address these needs. So one is doing a behavioral type assessment when somebody comes into the ED. And I've even seen health systems create kind of multidisciplinary teams that when somebody does come into the emergency department, a psychiatric consultation team, and it's really to support the medical team with any psych issues that the patient has. So first treat their utmost health condition that brought them to the ED, but secondary to support them with their mental health needs as well.
Great. Thanks, Amy and Dr. Zahn. So Dr. Zahn, I know that some behavioral health patients are very passive, but then you also have some who are rather aggressive. So as it relates to aggressive behavioral health patients, what do you think are three quick things that every ED should be doing?
So actually, you raise a number of questions. And if I can come at this broadly first and then focused on a little bit more of patients that are behavioral problems. So what I'm seeing is a couple things. I'm seeing that emergency physicians and emergency departments, for the most part, are not comfortable with dealing with psychiatric patients. And so that is a major concern, that we don't address their needs as well as we could. We do a great job with chest pain and stroke and sepsis. I mean, we have a whole team ready to go as soon as there's the slightest indication that they could be having an acute MI or they could be having a stroke. But when it comes to a psychiatric patient, we really don't have the resources, or don't, maybe we do have the resources, but don't put them to use for those patients that come in with a severe psychiatric complaint that may exhibit as a behavioral disorder or agitation or violent behavior. And so the first issue is we should have those resources, some comfort level and some understanding. So that's an educational issue. Then the second is, when they do come in, how do we address their problem? How do we address their agitation? Again, if I have an analogy going back to chest pain, stroke, sepsis, we have a protocol for who does what when. We need that kind of protocol for psychiatric patients. So the best thing we can do, at least the first step that is recommended, is to use verbal de-escalation. And verbal de-escalation is really that, to me, all common sense. You know, give the patient space, find out what their needs are, don't be provocative, those kind of things. And that's the first step. Then the second step is, if that doesn't work, what do we do? Well, most will go to medicating the patient and or restraining them. And we'll talk about restraints in a minute. I think medication probably should be our second choice. And what is recommended, the guidelines from the American Association for Emergency Psychiatry recommend determining what the underlying etiology is for their agitation and trying to address that. So is this from substance use? Is this from a underlying psychiatric illness? Is this from delirium or dementia, et cetera, et cetera? So trying to figure out what the underlying problem is, and then tailoring that underlying problem to an appropriate treatment. So not everyone should get the Haldol lorazepam cocktail. So some patients may get it, but other patients may need just Ativan. Some patients may need their problem or issue addressed as to why they are so agitated. You know, it might be they want someone with them, they want to make a phone call, they might want to eat, they want their medical problem addressed, they're in pain, et cetera, et cetera. So I think if you ask me the three things that we really need to focus on, it is attempting verbal de-escalation, which means trying to find out what's causing their agitation or what we can address to deal with their agitation. And the second would be to give them medication to calm them down, not sedate them, calm them down, and tailor that medication to their underlying etiology for their agitation. And then lastly, should we need to restrain them, that we do it in a professional, appropriate, well-trained manner to deal with these patients. But that should really be our last resort. And if you look at well-designed emergency departments, or especially psychiatric emergency services, they rarely have to do that because they deal with the front-end issue so much. What we tend to do in the emergency department is a patient comes in a little bit agitated, psychiatric complaint. We put them in the waiting room and they may sit there for minutes to hours. Then we bring them back and it's a chaotic, noisy, stressful environment. And we wonder why they get agitated and why they get out of control. And one of the things that I promote is, well, maybe we should be assessing their level of agitation when they come in, meaning that there are lots of tools we can use to assess their level of agitation when they come in the door. Even better than that is what we actually looked at a few years ago, which is self-declared level of agitation. And we looked at 100 patients who came in the emergency department for a psychiatric complaint and just asked them on a scale of 1 to 5, how agitated do you feel? And 80% of those patients felt agitated, may not have exhibited the behavior yet, because it wasn't that bad, meaning that they weren't pacing, they weren't threatening, they weren't screaming, but inside they were feeling really agitated. And when we do that, we can actually start treating them with lorazepam before it gets worse. So that would really be kind of the third best practice, which is to assess their level of agitation when they come in the door, maybe a triage, and start treating it. Why wait until they're acting it out? Why not treat them before it gets so bad that we need to think about restraining them or doing something significant like that?
That's a great point, and one that where if somebody doesn't work in the emergency department, anyone, even the healthy parent of a patient coming in, you can start to feel agitated just being in that environment around so much chaotic and illness. But as it relates to adolescents, as we're seeing more identification or more diagnosis of children on the autism spectrum or with behavioral disorders, it might not specifically be a mental health issue, but those other issues. How can an emergency department identify the needs of those adolescents and maybe treat them differently from the start to avoid any kind of aggressive behavior or issues?
I think you brought up a really great question, which is, what do we do with those kids that they might be on the autistic spectrum, they might be developmentally delayed or disabled, but those kids are really a major concern in the emergency department for a number of reasons. One is, how do we assess them? How do we treat them? And then lastly, how do we make a disposition for these kids? So the first thing that we really need to do is to be able to separate out, is this a behavioral problem or is this a psychiatric problem? And sometimes that's not easy, especially in the emergency department where we're not the best at sorting out even psychiatric problems. So I will give you an example of a case that I had seen and some of the dilemmas that we had around a developmentally delayed child. Or it could have been autistic, but in this case, it was a DD child. And it was actually a teenager. And so the parents brought the child in because they had gotten to the point in the care of this child that they just couldn't handle him anymore. And why couldn't they handle him anymore? Because what was happening is, as soon as they went outside, the kid would just run anywhere and would run out in front of traffic. And they really got worried that there was a concern here about the child running out in traffic like that. And the question was, you know, is this child suicidal or is this child just using bad judgment or what's going on with the child? And that was a big question. You know, is this a behavioral issue, meaning that he just needs behavioral modification, or is this really a psychiatric suicidal attempt? Now, while we're assessing the kid, how do we keep the kid under control? And that's the next really important topic here, which is how to handle a DD autistic kid while they're in the emergency department. So, couple of things. And this is where the parents or care providers are so critical, because they'll tell you, how the child usually functions and what calms them down, what occupies their time. I mean, there's basic things in the emergency department that we'd have to try to control, like the noise, the chaos, the bright lights. So the first thing I would say is if there's any way we can put this child in a different setting or in a quieter, less stimulated area of the emergency department, that would be the first thing that I would recommend. Then the second is to talk to the parents and care providers to see what's worked for this child before, what calms them, what occupies their time. And so in this case that I mentioned, the kid loved coloring books. And when you gave him a coloring book, that's all he did was color the coloring book, and there really wasn't any problem or issues. Once you took or didn't give him a coloring book, then he was just really agitated, jumping off the bed, walking around, just being a difficult behavior problem. So we solved the issue about controlling the behavior. Then the question was, well, what do you do about a child who may or may not be suicidal? Because the issue is, it's much more difficult to place an autistic child that has suicidality, meaning a psychiatric and a medical problem, or a psychiatric problem and a behavioral problem, than just a child with, say, one or the other. So we had to clarify whether this child was running out to the streets because he was suicidal, or was there some other reason? So when we actually spent some time talking to the child and talking to the family, we got a much better understanding that when he's outside, he just runs anywhere. And the parents were concerned that he runs into the street and may harm himself. Not that he wanted to hurt himself, but this is just his normal behavior to run around when he's outside. So once we were able to clarify, in fact, that he wasn't trying to harm himself, then it was much easier for us then to determine an appropriate disposition. And it became a behavior problem and not a psychiatric problem. And so that really helps us in determining what to do.
Thank you, Dr. Zahn. You mentioned about patients potentially harming themselves, but then you have oppositional defiance disorder. And those patients tend to be more defiant towards their parents and their caregiver and their physicians and nurses in the hospital. What recommendations would you have for healthcare systems dealing with patients with oppositional defiance disorder?
So the children with oppositional defiant disorder are not that easy to manage. And the problem with these kids is they tend to have, you know, these frequent temper tantrums, and they argue and they question and they're defiant, and they're just difficult patients to care for in the emergency setting. And so, again, what I would recommend is to try to find a place for the child that is less stimulating and try to use those tools of verbal de-escalation where you're not dealing in kind with them when they start being attacking, or they're angry, or they're mean, or they're just being difficult. Rather than dealing with them in kind, it's much easier to just talk calmly to them and try to explain what's going on with them and set reasonable limits for them. One of the things that we don't tend to do that would be very helpful, I think, is to introduce these kids to the emergency department. So this is the emergency department. This is what happens. This is who's going to be talking to you. This is what they're going to be asking you. So to me, part of this is explaining to them kind of what's going to happen and who's going to be involved in your care and those kind of things that I think would be beneficial for kids that need that assistance. And if all else fails, then we can go to medication, but that would not be my first choice.
Dr. Zahn, those were great insights to the risk as it stands today. But looking forward, what trends do you foresee in the future as it relates to behavioral health adolescents in the ED?
I think there's a couple of trends that I'm both seeing and I think will be up and coming. So as the health marketplace continues to push on providers doing more and more, and unfortunately, if that's for less and less resources or money, there is going to be a push for emergency departments to do more with those psychiatric patients, both adults and kids that present with psychiatric illnesses, that they're probably going to have to do more to assess and determine the disposition of those patients, as well as thinking about, you know, whether they can go home or need to be admitted, whether they need to be on certain meds or restarted on certain meds or not. So, and unfortunately, the resources that we have to treat psychiatric patients in the emergency departments are fairly limited in some communities, and some communities not so much. And what I'm seeing on the horizon is more and more communities or hospitals going towards acute stabilization units, psychiatric observation, psychiatric emergency service, whatever you wish to call it. Basically, I'm seeing a move in that direction. And that move is, again, predicated on reduced dollars, reduced capability of putting patients in inpatient beds. So rather than having that patient sit around the emergency department for hours to days for an inpatient bed, maybe we can put them in psychiatric observation. And at least the studies demonstrate, my experience has been that many of those patients can actually go home after 24 hours or so of treatment. So I think we're going to see more and more push on emergency departments to deal with patients with psychiatric problems and find reasonable, appropriate treatment options or treatment locations besides everyone going into an inpatient bed. And the resources will be limited and more limited as time goes on for psychiatric inpatient services.
If I can just add, Shalay, I think outside of the emergency department, providers are really shifting more towards wellness and the inclusion of behavioral health. They're addressing mental well-being at annual checkups, and they're providing psychiatry services in primary care practice groups. So it's really addressing the whole health of the patient. And perhaps with that whole health and wellness initiatives, it will lead to less need for hospitalization or visits to the ED by the behavioral health patient.
We've seen more clients start to use telepsych services. Can you comment on the utilization of telepsych in healthcare systems?
Well, it's funny that you brought that up, because now I'm with the health department, and we have embedded in every one of our six federally qualified health centers a behavioral health specialist, so that this is really, we're moving towards that model of integrated care where they'll see a primary care provider and, you know, next door is a counselor, and they can see a counselor right away and get evaluated. And if they need further treatment, they'll make referrals to our psychiatry service or whatever they might need. So we're really seeing that integration, at least in the Lake County Health Department. And I think that's really, we're going to see more and more of that. Now, we have a number of services that other communities may not have, including substance abuse treatments and psychiatrists and things like that, that can integrate fairly well with what we're doing in our general clinics.
Thank you, Dr. Zahn and Amy, for providing us with these risk insights into dealing with behavioral health patients in the ED. I trust this information will be very useful for our listeners. Thank you again.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the AXA-XL Healthcare Risk Insights podcast. Stay tuned for future podcasts where we will dive deep into other current and developing risks impacting the healthcare industry.